Hello, it's Richard here again. I'm here with Gillian, who sent me a message recently after reading my blog about what we learned in our 3-month co-living experiment. And she said, "Hey, we should talk about co-living and finances and ownership and community governance." And my eyes went like those emoji stars. And this is our first time meeting, and I thought it might be interesting to record the conversation in case one of us says something interesting. What did you have on your mind, Gillian?
Hi. I'll introduce myself briefly just because I feel like anyone watching this knows you already but might not know me. My name is Gillian Morris. I write a blog along with Phil Levin about co-living or community living, living near friends. So Phil was one of the co-founders of Radish, a compound in Oakland, and also a company called Live Near Friends. I founded a tech company that helped you find cheap flights before called Hitlist. So with Supernuclear, we try and just collect best practices and case studies and share stories. And so we will be reposting, hopefully, some of Richard's great lessons. And I also just feel very passionately. I've been living in community for 10 years now. I've started a few community spaces, one in New York called Gramercy House in 2015 that lasted until the landlord sold the building in 2022. And then lived in the Bay Area for a bit and experienced some of the wonders there from a sort of icebreaker car ferry that was this sort of radical commune for a couple of years. And then moved down to Puerto Rico in 2019 and started a place called Casa Chironja, which is now hybrid. Part of it is rented and part of it is owned by members of the community. It's two properties, so one rented, one owned. And I just have to say, having finally purchased property, I am happy to share how we financed it, how we've managed that. And it's just, I paid over $1 million in rent in the first 6 years that I was co-living, $750,000 in New York City because rent is expensive here. I mean, I wasn't, obviously this wasn't coming out of my pocket, but I aggregated rent from people and paid to landlords. And it's just so empowering to actually be owners now and to be able to do long-term planning. And I want to, give more people the tools to do this and if hopefully help people from saving the save them from making the same mistakes we did.
That's extremely exciting.
And also share the joys. I don't want to sound so negative.
Well, I've been on the renting game forever, and we're just now starting to get serious about what would the transition look like from renting to buying, and where would the money come from, and how would we structure the ownership, and how do we do the governance, and all of these questions are wide open, and it feels like they're quite significant, like whichever way we go is going to have a lot of impact on the way that the projects develop. So I'm very curious to hear. I'm sort of in this mode now of like just meeting people, hearing their stories, and understanding like what have you learned, and trying to make a match for like what seems appropriate for us in this context. We're doing things in Europe instead of in the States. There's like all these different things. So yeah, what tell me, what do you know?
Well, I guess I can just give the story of Casa Chironja in particular, because I haven't written it down anywhere yet, and I feel like it's the most instructive. So, I moved down to Puerto Rico in 2019. I really missed the communal living setup that I'd had in New York and the Bay Area, and I tried really hard to find other people who wanted to start a house with me, and there was one person who was super enthusiastic and had actually started a house, but it was kind of illegal, and he ended up in a dispute with his landlord. But also, the house that he started was a little bit more on the young college dorm side of things, whereas I was like, I'm in my 30s. I like nice things, but I want to, share them with people. And I've always thought that there's this peculiar line. I feel like a lot of people think co-living or communal living is just for if you're really trying to save money. And I'm like, I actually would like to invest in my home and have a nice home, but you can get like a really, really nice home if you combine that level of investment with a few people. So anyway, wasn't finding it. COVID hit and it was so difficult and so miserable to be, isolated, as I'm sure a lot of people were. And I started looking around and I found a rental for a reasonable amount. It had been a high-end Airbnb, and the owner was kind of panicking. And we negotiated a year-long contract for It's 8 grand a month was the rent for a 7-bedroom house. So in Puerto Rico, I think that is a very reasonable rent, but again, it's kind of hard to convince people, oh, you're going to spend more than $1,000 to share a room in a place. I think sometimes people think of vacation destinations like either like, oh, I'm going to Bali or I'm going to Mexico and I should get a villa for $300 or something. So anyway, it was a is I think, but we had some advantages as well. Puerto Rico is territorially part of the US, so Americans were able to travel there during COVID restrictions, but also we weren't planning to set up a vacation place. I wanted a home of long-term people. And for COVID and all that, we needed to have it like a mi month minimum. So people started signing on. It was pretty tough to get people committed long-term, but I think people were open to it because of COVID in a way, open to 1 to 3 month stays because of COVID in a way that they hadn't been really before. So we eventually, in putting that house together as well, I was taking deposits from people, but I needed to put down 24,000 up front, which was first month, last month, and security deposit, which was obviously stressful. I collected about half of that in deposits, and I didn't have the cash to bridge the difference. But someone that I had gotten to know over the past year, who happened to be just a much more just a high net worth individual, was like, I really like the communities you bring together. I really want to support this. Is there, you know, like, what do you need to make this happen? And I was like, 12 grand. And this person wrote me a check and they're like, pay me back, obviously, but you know, on the timing that works for you. And I'm so grateful for that. And obviously, I am incredibly privileged and lucky to have someone that is willing to provide that loan. But I also think that's not uncommon in these communities in which we exist. I think there are people that there are people that for whatever reason have more liquidity, whether they inherited it or their startup went big or something like this, but they don't have the time to spend it. And if they recognize someone doing something they want to exist, they're willing to support that. And it's not like I was friends with this person because they were a high net worth individual. It was just someone that had come to events that I'd thrown and believed in what I was doing. And so that was obviously really key to getting that property started. And I was able to pay them back. It was honestly, I mean, it was tough to Puerto Rico is a pretty seasonal destination. People don't want to really be there in the summer and hurricane season. So we started the house in October 2020, and it was basically like it was full, full, full. Everything was great, making a bunch of money. And then we ended up in the summer and hurricane season having sometimes 4 rooms empty. So all of the surplus that we had built up, I had built a financial model assuming that there would be some low season. So I charged slightly more for the winter months. But it was really tight. And I ended up having to bridge some September of 2021. By that time, for my own life, I had professional reasons, I had a little bit more cash, but I did have to pay, like I had to put in at like 4 or 5 grand more to cover rent. And that was stressful, obviously. But then we kind of, the nice thing about these projects is they also build momentum. And so people really loved being there and people wanted to come back. And as the high season started again, the house filled up again. I raised rent. I don't think I raised rents, but I think we ended up with absolutely no vacancy until June of 2022. And so I was able to, you know, again, build it up. I was able to pay myself back. And then was able to start paying back that 12 grand that that person had lent me. And that was the initial house. And then we got to a point where it was starting to become a little bit more financially sustainable. We had a little less vacancy. We only had like 2 rooms vacant in the summer and the early fall. And meanwhile, the property next door came available for sale. And the property next door was 4 apartments. 2 3-bedrooms, 2 1-bedrooms. So about the same capacity, you know, 7 bedrooms in one house versus 8 bedrooms between 4 apartments. It was priced at a ridiculously low rate for the market. Clearly, the owner was very motivated. And I obviously was like, guys, like, let's see if we can purchase this. And there was one person who happened to be an early employee at a tech company who was like, yeah, sure, I'll put down some. And other people that sort of were interested, but it was like, this is just going to sell so fast. I don't know if I'm going to be able to raise the money in time. And I did not pitch this, but the same high net worth individual came back and said, listen, again. And at this point, there was also, like a year plus of evidence that I could run a tight ship and bring good people around and sort of not lose money. And I was starting to pay back the loan. And this person said, you know what, I will purchase the property because he could see it was a good investment. And if you can buy it from me within the next couple of months, I'll give it to you at cost. And beyond that, I'll put it on the market. And this was a person, by the way, I was trying not to give the person's gender just for anonymity, but I just slipped up and said he. And I feel a desire to just clarify that this was not a person that I was ever romantically involved with. I don't want it to sound like this was a sugar daddy. It absolutely was not. And I'm sorry, I just whatever. And so I did that, and I went out to the community. A lot of people were interested, but it was proving pretty difficult to herd the cats. And but there was another person within our community who was a little bit more. So there's one person who said, I'm in for I could do up to a couple hundred thousand dollars in investment. The total price was around 900 grand for this property. And then another individual who actually hadn't lived in the house but was good friends with us and lived nearby and had three kids said, this just seems amazing and I would love to be involved. And that person could also put in a couple hundred thousand. And then I was able to as well. And so between the three of us, we were able to purchase in cash, which is obviously very lucky. But it was also a combination of just the timing worked out in our lives. If we had needed to finance it though, we would have been a very unconventional group to lend to. So even though at the time the interest rates were much, much better than they are today in the US, it was pretty unlikely that we were going to get it, also on the timeline that this person was, saying. But also for each of us, we knew that we were taking a risk, but it was an investment and in a very, very desirable vacation destination in a very, at a very, very good price. And we're like, listen, if this all fails, we'll just turn it into an Airbnb rental property that is, we'll hire a property manager or we'll sell it and we should get a return pretty, So we were able to do that. So we purchased the property. It had some existing tenants, but all of their leases were running out. And so we were able to, we definitely had to make some investments in renovating, but we were also able to rent out from day one. And so there was a little bit of income that was pretty much offsetting all of the expenses of the things that we had to put in until we decided we wanted to invest in solar because we needed in Puerto Rico, the grid's not very reliable. We knew we needed backup power. And so we each then had to put in another 37,000, which was, for me, it was really stretching the limits of my financial ability to do this. But it was at the same time, it was something that, that was basically going to, what we were going to be paying in our energy bills anyway, because Puerto Rico energy is incredibly expensive. I mean, as in, we were paying a little under 30 grand. We were projecting paying a little under 30 grand for energy anyway. So, that's the basics of it. We ended up doing sort of Radish style. So we purchased as an LLC. So it's a company that is technically in ownership of this, but we also mutually, none of us are sort of there to maximize our investments. We want to have a home for our community. And so the rents are definitely under market rate for the people that we vet and join. And I can talk more about that, but that's a, and there are a few things that I really value about the setup that we have. First of all, having four apartments means it is actually a lot easier than a seven bedroom house, because the four apartments mean that we can have, if at any point we don't have enough of our own community to fill them, we can put them on Airbnb. And there, the property is set up so that each apartment is like fairly easy. The only apartment that we don't put on Airbnb is the lower three bedroom apartment, which has kind of become the default community space. It's the kitchen that people is where sort of long term storage is. But all of the other three units can all be put out on the sort of traditional rental market. And that, helps subsidize and helps bridge any gaps, which is huge. And so, yeah, we're now coming on to almost 3 years of ownership. And it's been, again, we're not seeking to maximize returns, but we also, as people, like, we also don't think that anyone should expect to park money with absolutely no dividend, because that's just charity. Which is a position that I would like to be in a position to put this much money into charity, but I'm not. And so we aim to give ourselves a 5% dividend per year, which means that the property needs to generate a little bit more than $45,000 over costs, to pay that dividend, which I think is very fair. We hope at someday, should we sell the property, that there would be a return on the principal as well, but we don't know. We also live in a flood zone in a hurricane-prone island, and climate change is real. And so there's that's a risk. But we're able to make investments and do things like have solar panels for our, our energy mix. We're able to, when we renovate, we can build exactly what we want based on what we've noticed of how we use the place. And it's just tremendously gratifying to know that the money that we put to, that we were paying to rent or something like this, it stays within the community, and we get to invest in spending it how we want.
That's really exciting. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
really cool. I feel reasonably experienced with the like community design, collaboration, governance stuff, but the actual like, can you make a business model work? Like I've made businesses before, but to put those two things together and say there's a business behind this community that makes it sustainable, like that's the kind of frontier of my learning edge, especially not just a business, because I've run events and things like that that are profitable, but like a capital intensive business, like taking on a big asset.
Yeah.
That's kind of the puzzle for me to be working out, like what are our options here, and then who do we have in the network that would be willing to support it, and on what terms would be acceptable to them or interesting to them, and that's the whole thing. I guess the first question that comes to me is about decision making and power and authority, and like how has that evolved over the time? So it sounded like at the start, it sounded like it was just basically your enthusiasm and willingness to move, got the thing underway. And then you started to bring other people in, some of whom it sounds like have got financial ease, other people who might be, I don't know how invested they are, like sort of like emotionally or how involved they are in the day to day. And then you'll have some people, I'm sure, that are very involved, but maybe don't have much in the financial assets. So like, how is that? Yeah, can you just talk me through a little bit about how those dynamics have worked about stakeholding?
Yeah, and absolutely, because I think it is incredibly important that I want to have a place that is financially accessible, that is able to like bring in a diversity of attendees and contributors and things like this. So that is something that we have figured out to do. And it's basically, I mean, the simple answer would be, it's like there are some people who want to, come in for vacation for a week, don't want to take any responsibility for anything, and we do charge more for that. So we have different rates. I mean, when I started the house originally, the minimum was a month, because obviously people needed to quarantine for COVID and all this type of stuff. And so people, there were different rates for 1 month versus 3 months versus annual.
Cool.
And now when we added the apartments and we added the ability to do even shorter, there is a weekly rate. We don't really do a daily rate. Sometimes we'll make an exception for people that we know well, but it's just a day-to-day is just too much hassle and turnover and overhead. So I think that's the simplest thing is basically just pricing that in. But of course, there are always exceptions to the rule. There are people who we know. I've been an entrepreneur. I've been in positions where I am tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Actually, I've been in over $100,000 worth of debt at points in my life, and then I've been in positions of ease. And so, it's also been something that as the house has become more established and as it's become more predictable, and we have evidence to say like we probably will be okay. It's become easier to say, you know what, why don't you're welcome to come and stay here for a week for free or something like this. For people, I also think obviously it's just such a foreign concept to a lot of people to share their space. And then I love exposing people to that. And so sometimes you need to get them in, you do need to offer them a little bit of free time. But I just think open communication is important about that. As far as decision making and responsibility, so a few nice things happened. So I mentioned at the beginning of this call someone who had started a co-working space, sorry, a co-living space in Puerto Rico, but that was like a little bit more college dormy, young. That person ended up, this super entrepreneurial Puerto Rican guy ended up moving into the apartments when we bought them, and then he ended up taking over the lease of the main house. So he now administers the 7-bedroom house, and it's completely in his hands, which he's been doing an amazing job. And it's really amazing for me to not be in a position where I have 15 rooms under my management. I never want to be a manager. Like I would rather that the community manages itself and everything is diffused and things like this. But I also, usually as the one who is on the lease or who is the organizer, I'm the backstop manager. So with the property that we bought, it's three partners, which is really nice because there's basically always there's always going to be a simple majority or consensus. Obviously, we would prefer to be in consensus, but I do think that things come up and there are things that we're not aligned on, but usually two out of three of us are on it, and the third one just is like, okay, well, I accept because that's how it is. And so there hasn't been any major, we've also been lucky enough. We all knew each other decently, or I knew both better than they knew each other. But we've been able to just have a lot of respect for each other, and yeah, it's worked out fine. And we just sort of we have board meetings where we go to a nice dinner and we charge it to the LLC. It's a business expense. And drink a lot of wine and hash out anything that might be coming up. And then we just have a group chat and an email chain that, for things, other things as they come up.
I think the reason I'm asking about this is because one of the concerns that I have, I think, is that like you said about running a tight ship, like I know how to run a tight ship, but it's something that I and we know how to organize things and when it comes to fundraising and really putting a flag in the ground and saying we're going to do something ambitious, the way that I feel confident to do that is to say like I'm going to hold a lot of the decision making power because I know what I'm doing and it's like if it's not my money immediately, it's my reputation that's got the money in, like that. It sort of feels, on the one hand, it feels natural for me to like hold the power closely, and then on the other hand, it's like, well, actually, the whole spirit that excites me is about the communal atmosphere where people are taking responsibility, and it's not my thing, it's our thing, and that then, obviously leans towards a more cooperative way of doing things with power that's more explicitly distributed across more people, and I'm just like flip-flopping in my head about which side of that line that I want to go on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in I share your sentiment. Like, I would really love to have things be super decentralized and have that work. And I have seen that. I've lived in a few communities where power has actually been like really multipolar, you know, like they're, or people gravitate towards the roles that they're most suited for and take responsibility, and it just kind of works. I've also, you know, again, like I said, by being the organizer, I've generally, it's ended up defaulting to me. One change that I made that I see in your blog that you already do is I didn't pay myself anything. I didn't get a discount on rent. I got nothing for the organizing energy that I put in until mid 2022. And that was something I did it because I love living this way. I'm passionate about it. It's fun for me. You know, I did get plenty of intangible benefits. Things like, for example, because I was organizing, I could choose exactly who I wanted around and optimize for the people that I was most excited to be around, that type of thing. But that also isn't like I love meeting my friends' friends, and I would have loved for more people to step in. Again, I think Puerto Rico might be a tricky place because for so many people, they do treat it as a vacation destination. And I was always trying to get more people who are long-term committed to living in Puerto Rico. And it was always a tricky sell because if you're long-term committed to Puerto Rico is a super network-based place as well. So you could usually find some sort of sweetheart rent deal that was going to be cheaper than this big house and without the uncertainty of all this. Anyway, it's a particular thing. Feel like my train of thought derailed. What was your question again?
Well, it's just I'm just toss turning over like whether to share ownership or not, or not even ownership,
Yes.
but really the governance. You know, where does the decision-making power live?
I mean, I think there are certain things where it does make sense to, like, for finding a property or purchasing a property. I feel like maybe you wrote about this, but it's a common thing that anyone who's organized has noticed. Like, if you try and have too many cooks in the kitchen, like, you're never going to be able to satisfy everyone, or you're unlikely to be able to satisfy everyone. I have a post on Supernuclear about managing collective finances and just this Venn diagram of like, okay, you have three people and like you can find the center, you know, like, and they each have a few non-negotiables, and you know, but if you have 10 people, like finding the thing that fits that. So I think if you can have a smaller committee that is making big decisions, it can be easier, especially as things are getting off the ground. However, the burnout is a real thing. And so I think those organizers should always be trying to cultivate people who will take on. And I wasn't super intentional about this. I just got incredibly lucky that Gustavo, who took over the 7-bedroom house, was sort of in my circle of friends and was enjoying what I was putting together. And then it was sort of, we became closer and he, you know, stepped into this role, which was amazing. I have at times tried to more consciously cultivate other people to kind of step into more leadership and ownership, and it hasn't worked. But again, I think my sample size is small because I think it's been like, well, someone had, and then someone had like a, you know, like fell in love with someone who lives in Virginia and ended up moving up there, you know, like, so it doesn't always work, but I think it's something that is something that should be a priority. And I am so when we purchased the property, the three people of us who did it had an intention to split work fairly equally. Or we brainstormed this division where one person was going to be in charge of property maintenance, upgrades, you know, all of the like physical stuff. And one person was going to be in charge of all of the legal and financial record keeping and tracking and bookkeeping and all of that, and making sure our taxes were filed and all that. And then I was going to be in charge of the, you know, guest renter management. So like recruiting people to fill the space and all of that. It happened that the other two people throughout the course of 2022, one was ended up very tragically, their father was got really sick and they needed to become a caretaker and move off island for a period of time. And then the other one just had other very, very understandable life circumstances come up to a point where they weren't able to be very active. And so all of a sudden, I was doing all of it pretty much, which was made it difficult for me to do other things, because it really kind of became some, especially managing like the solar installation was like a full-time job. So that was the point at which, I mean, thankfully both they were fairly understanding. I mean, one was like, yeah, just take a management fee. And then the other one said, let's hire a professional manager. And I was like, I have been trying to hire a professional manager and they're very expensive and they don't do as good a job as me. And like, I'm here and I'm living in this space. And at this point in my life, my startup had kind of gone belly up in the pandemic. And I was like, I actually have the time and I think I'm doing this well. And so I hadn't thought to pay myself initially, but then when my partner mentioned it, I was like, okay, yeah, I think that actually would be fair. And I think that I can, that'll also give me the mental space to be able to focus on this and not worry about the fact that, you know, I'm literally dealing with like an exploding cistern and thus not able to actually work full time at the, like I had to quit my job because I was dealing with so much stuff around the house. So it gave me a little bit more financial anyway. So I do think it's important that for the people who are putting in time and responsibility that they are compensated.
And I'm just the light bulb going off in my head, which is kind of obvious, but it's good for me to notice, is compensation can be a salary or it can be an asset. You know, like it both of those are good, and I think I had them kind of like smushed together in my head where, at the house we rented over the winter, me and Nati took all of the financial risk and we took all of the profit. Well, not all of the profit because there were some people that came in and did some facilitation and we paid them a fee, but essentially the overall project, like we took the salary out of it.
I would call that costs, not profit. You know, like you gave them, that was part of it.
But that we could frame that as like, well, this is our monthly salary for running the place and taking the risk and so on. And when I'm thinking about next steps, the other thing is, I'm gonna turn 40 in a few months, and I'm starting to think about like, oh, I really should start to think about building some kind of assets for the future. I have really not prioritized that dimension. And the idea of like being able to have some kind of assets and to be growing something that's like looking after our future feels smart. And I think I just had them in the same bucket where it's like actually you could have some people there that are paid a salary to take care of the place, and there's other people there that they're paying rent but they also own the thing or some combination of the above. That's really useful to just unpack that a bit more.
I mean, sorry, I don't, I mean, I want to hear your next question, but I also do think like there is something, obviously, I feel this very large divide between commercial co-living, which is like professionally managed, investor-driven co-living versus community-led co-living. And so when you get into the point where you're paying property managers and paying managers, stuff like this, you're kind of edging more towards the commercial co-living side of things, which for me is, it's not the way I want to live. I want to be in a place where if we generate extra, like if we end up making more money, it's something that we get to reinvest in the community. And so there is this fuzzy line where it's like, okay, well, I do think that people that are willing to park a large hundreds of thousands of dollars somewhere should get a financial return. But again, if we were trying to maximize financial return, we would just be Airbnb-ing the place. So finding values-aligned investors that are okay taking a 5% return, which is not that much for a vacation rental investment if it were framed that way, but it's not. It's an investment in the community. And I mean, for my property management, I charge the LLC less than half of what the market rate for a property manager would be. Because it's also just not that hard for me compared to someone who lived offsite or something like that.
Makes sense. My follow-up question was going to be about Yeah, this thing of like cultivating more ownership and be able to share the load with more people. Does it feel interesting to you, or is it r realistic to imagine some long-term residents, for example, like buying a minority share of the LLC at some point and joining you at
Oh,
that table?
1000%. I
Right.
mean, this is something, I mean, we've always wanted to do that, and we're actually just starting to, in the sense that one of the three partners is down to sell their stake. And so we have one person buying in and potentially a few others. And so, yeah, I would love nothing more than for the place to be truly, multi-owner. And I think there's also, the ability to do creative financing peer-to-peer, where, say, someone is like, well, okay, you don't have $10,000 to put in right now, but you are paying this much rent. And if you pay, $2,000 rent instead of $1,000 rent, you have enough capacity to do that. And it's like, okay, so over the course of a year, you're paying 2,000, you've paid back that 10 grand, what I mean, 10 grand plus. And so we've seen, and I've seen this in a lot of co-living spaces, is just, again, very trust-based peer-to-peer lending of certain amounts of money.
And then, as I guess, the other aspect of that for me is about, like, for example, you talked about Gustavo, this thing where you have a network of people, you have an opportunity to get to know them and to see how things are going, and then when opportunities arise, you can say like, hey, I trust you to take on this thing, or like, we're ready to collaborate at this next level. I feel like that's really solid, that someone can come in as a short-term renter, and then over time you develop this mutual understanding and say, oh, great, I would love to share ownership with you. This makes perfect sense, and we're just waiting for the time to line up.
Yeah. I mean, it's also just the benefit of having a place for longer. This is one thing that I wonder, I think, and everyone that I've talked to, I have a little community call with a few other people that have done sort of major co-living projects, whether it's long duration or significant investment. And we, which by the way, you should join that community. It's just about 10 of us, and we have a little brainstorm. Anyway, but how much easier it gets with time, basically, like, because you build up a culture, and you just all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, over many years, you build a flywheel of like, okay, we know that these renters are going to be low risk because they've come before, and so we can afford to charge them less because we know that, like, if the light bulb in the fridge goes out, we're not going to have to pay a property manager to go and change that. They're going to take care of it themselves, and so you build up this really, like, you build a symbiotic relationship, something like that, where these communities become more resilient. And the nice thing is also, now that I've built this experience with Gustavo and with a few other, and with the co-owners and things like this, it's so much more achievable to say, I'm not starting another property anytime soon. I also have no desire to have like a co-living, like a property empire or something. Like, I just want to be where I want to live. But I do feel like I could support. I have a friend who was starting a place in Mexico City, and I was like, listen, do you want to do a trade where like you buy $50,000 worth of my chunk of Casa Chironja management, whatever, and I'll put $50,000 into your thing in Mexico. Like, I would love to have that kind of exchange, or frankly, just to support that project with the expertise. And yeah, because there are people that used to live in Casa Chironja, there are people that I like trust 1000% and would love to come and visit and stay in whatever they create in Mexico.
That's really cool.
And
That's
it,
obviously
sorry,
really,
and
that's kind of the dream, right?
yeah, and maybe to just fully complete that thought, because I feel like that might be the point for them, is because it's like not any less money if they're putting 50,000, but they're putting 50,000 into a project that is significantly de-risked compared to the new thing that they're starting.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm thinking something through, and I wonder if it's useful to just spell it out and get your impressions.
Yeah, of course.
Basically, the next steps that I can see for us is, we have to make a decision about, are we going to do a rental for maybe a couple of years. I was going to do what they in Spain call a rent to buy, which is like a particular kind of arrangement where you lock in a price and then you have the option to decide whether or not you're going to buy it. Or we could just kind of jump right ahead and outright purchase a place. And that's ranked in order of increasing financial commitment to do that. And kind of increasing risk as well. So like just getting a rental place, if we don't like it or it doesn't work out after a year or two, you can sort of like bail and you haven't really lost too much. But also it's there's maybe, I don't know, I could check the numbers, but there must be like 20 times more properties for sale than there are for rent, sort of in the places that we're looking and the type of places that we're looking. So my way of thinking about that at the moment has just been, well, maybe I'll just start having conversations with people who I think might be in a position to invest and sort of see how much appetite they've got and what do they think, and then just kind of just take that first pulse and say, are we looking at like a $100,000 temporary thing or more like an $800,000 we're actually going to be able to purchase and get something going, and just kind of feel it out that way. But yeah, as I described that, I'm just curious like what your reaction is and if you have opinions about renting versus buying. And
I mean, I have very firm opinions on this in
great,
the sense
hit me.
that well, I mean, I think you just said it yourself. You said if there are 20 times more places available for sale than there are for rent, then there's probably tremendous appetite. So I think your downside is limited because if so, the downside of buying is that you're locked in to this capital project, major capital project, but. If you, I mean, obviously it depends on your choice of property, but it sounds like if a year or two in it becomes really apparent that this is not what you want to be doing or it's not working or something like this, it sounds like you can put it on the rental market. And then just, so I don't, it, so it doesn't sound as risky as I think it would be if you, obviously, yeah, don't get a place that is, you know, this speaks to like, maybe get a place that is multiple units, which are also just easier to rent, you know, because there are always going to be people who are like, no, I really do want my place with its own kitchenette or something like this. And but you can still have that communal feel with a property that has great amenities. I am just so happy to own. Again, it's been a tremendous amount of work. It was a big risk. It still is a risk. But we, I think I over-indexed on how risky it was before I went through the process. It's like, you know, when people are afraid to move abroad or something, and then anyone who's moved abroad once is like, oh, wait, that was like, you just
You
figure it
can just
out.
go
Like,
somewhere else.
it's not rocket science, you know, like, and that's basically how I feel about this. I mean, I've had to figure out a lot of things. I've had to YouTube how to, you know, replace a faucet and a sink or something because the handyman wasn't going to be free for a week and I need a sink more than a week, whatever. But like, you're a very resourceful person and I'm sure that you're surrounded by people who are as well. I think the likelihood of it going truly south is low. And again, if it does, put it on the rental market.
I like this. This feels good to hear. There's also I have to convince my wife, you know. But I think she and I are
That's fair.
actually. I think you're actually right. This thing of over-indexing on the risk because it's unfamiliar, and I think both she and I have, you know, lived our whole lives in a position of like being basically poorer than a lot of our peers, and sort of being like, oh, that's out of reach. That's not for us. That's sort of like it's a kind of a class thing, you know. It's like that's not our
Yeah.
reality. But I'm sort of waking up to the fact to say, oh, well, we've got excellent organizing skills, excellent reputation, excellent network, and yeah, we don't have a huge pile of savings that we can just deploy at will. But probably with the right framing, the right question, the right sort of safeguards in place, we can just get the thing that we want, that we think is right, and make it work, I think.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, even if you don't have, you know, I think voting power being tied to financial stake makes sense in some cases. And again, it's been very simple with us because we had three equal cash parts in terms of governance. But I think as became apparent when my other two partners in this project became too busy and basically just delegated all authority to me. There are a lot of people who want these things to exist and are willing to just give power to run them to someone else. And in fact, prefer that. They would prefer not to have to make decisions or be bothered with the small stuff. So yeah, I do. And also, I never came to this person that, again, was really crucial to these two projects getting started, initially renting the house and then being able to purchase. I never asked them. They came, I was public about my struggles. I was saying like, oh man, I wish I could do this. And it was known within the community. And they came to me. And that was incredibly heartwarming and affirming. And I didn't really believe in myself as much as other people believed in me, which was I suspect that you would have a lot of people in your community that would be happy to give you that level of support.
It feels good to imagine. I am I look I'm absolutely confident on the ability to make the thing function well and for it to be a benefit. And yeah, to like I mean, I spent all day every day helping people debug their collaboration challenges. Like, I'm pretty solid on like how to make the thing work. And yeah, and it's just this kind of threshold of like, please, can we have a large bucket of money? That's an unfamiliar position to be in. Like, I've done it for business stuff, but not for our own. Like, it's our home. That's the thing as well, that it's our home, that it's like a person. It's partly, please support my family at the same time as it is, please invest in this community thing we're doing. And I think that just comes with all this like emotional, like, oh.
Yeah, no, I mean that's real. And I do, but I think also just sharing these experiences, more people telling their stories, that it makes it hopefully can make it a little bit easier and empower more people and hopefully give people the sense that this might be a useful way to invest their money as much as it is a gratifying way to spend your time and whatever, all sides of this equation. And I think the this high net worth individual, I think, is very happy with the fact that they made it all, like provided this part of it. And I am too. I'm happy I decided to do it.
I can see
It's
that.
been, yeah, no, I sorry, actually, I feel like maybe I do want to dwell on this for a second because it's been unbelievably rewarding. Like the amount of joy, the number of connections. I'm really never was doing this for my own sort of personal advancement or something, but it's definitely given me a lot of social capital. So I guess there's that. But more than that, I mean, it's just seeing the connections as well. I mean, there have been several marriages and of people that have met through houses that I've put together and one baby so far, couple others in the works, I think. And we've create and business collaborations and social change and social movements, and it's just like the most beautiful thing to see, and I think it's really exciting, and I feel like my life, has been personally incredibly enriched, but it's also been amazing to see the impact ripple out through, hundreds of different people's lives as well.
I feel you. I mean, I've seen it in our own like when we do like a 4-day retreat or something like that, like I know there's a certain percentage of people that are going to have a really transformative experience, and you can kind of watch how their life changes as a result. And then when we went from doing retreats to doing a 3-month residency, it's like that whole process just deepened another notch. And instead of it being about this like brief peak experience of like, wow, it's actually you're watching people over 3 months go through a significant like ripening or maturing process and opening and changing. And it's like, oh, this is the next level of contribution to make. And it's so gratifying to watch it happen. And I just know that when we have our place firmly established, it's like a nuclear reactor. I can just see how all the parts add up to this thing that's like humming with intensity. So yeah, that's been the thing that's been motivating me too. It's just like coming back into contact with that vision and knowing that It's going to be really, really good once we get it sorted, and there's just some kind of like practicalities to sort along the way.
Well, I'm so excited to see it take shape and meet in person someday. You know, I would love to see you guys in Puerto Rico. There are direct flights from Spain. There's
Great.
also actually a really sweet mileage hack if you have credit card points that can make it like $150 to get to Puerto Rico. So
You would be
just
the one to
saying.
talk to about that.
Indeed, yes.
I'm currently in a liminal space with my visa, so I'm not going to be traveling for the next little while, but we'll get that sorted out soon.
Anyway, yeah, and I'm happy to if any questions come up or any like weird specifics, always very available to talk through things and
Well, that really means a lot. Yeah. At this stage, it's even like helpful having an experienced person just to talk to, even for the experience of taking the ideas out of my head and trying to shape them and see how they feel as they say them out loud, and then hearing your version be like, oh yeah, it's normal and it's doable and like we can do this and we know people and it'll be fine. And if things get challenging, knowing that there's people that I can call is even better.
That's, yeah, I do. I started, you know, having started a company, I just realized like so much of us are going through the same things. And if we can share what we've learned, if we can, you know, make that knowledge a bit more common knowledge, there isn't a lot of education out here for
Yeah.
people doing this type of thing. It's still relatively new. If
Yeah.
you are watching this and you've gotten this far in the presentation, this is also a shout out to you for investing the time to try and, you know, make sense of it all.
I'm going to include the link to your blog in the description for this video. Is there anything else you want to plug?
Super nuclear, yeah, the blog. Where are you going to post this? I don't actually know what your
Yeah.
platforms are.
I will put it. There's a podcast for the Micro Solidarity channel, because for me, Micro Solidarity is the kind of it's a network of community organizers. So that's sort of like the home base that I have for putting stuff like this. But I kind of have multiple channels that I. That's a bit confusing.
Cool. All right. Well, pleasure to meet and talk to you.
It's been really great to meet you and talk as well. Thanks so much.
Great. Bye.